Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, Ash Barty is the Wimbledon champion. And doesn't that sound so completely right? It feels like, well, of course she's the Wimbledon champion. Ash Barty was always going to be a Wimbledon champion. And if it wasn't today, it would be another day. But of course, sport doesn't work like that. We've relived enough crucial moments in the history of this sport to know it doesn't work like that. And of course, it wasn't inevitable today. We'll come on to talk about the match and how uninevitable Karolina Pliskova managed to make it, and yet it just feels so inevitable and so perfect that Ash Barty, David and Matt, is the Wimbledon champion.
Yeah, so seeing her with the trophy is just perfect. It is right, as you say, and I think particularly given how much she's made it clear it was her goal, it was her dream. And it's clearly everything that she hoped it would be, even though I think it's still sinking in for her right now. But if you designed a game to fit on the centre court at Wimbledon, it would look something like Ash Barty's.
Yeah, totally. It all fits. I think we've experienced today one of those moments that we relived in Roland Garros relived and Wimbledon relived last summer, where we came away saying, well, we don't really believe in destiny, but a story like that would make us believe in it. This player who's, as you said, David, whose childhood dream it was to win Wimbledon, to do so with a game tailor-made for the grass, to do so on the 50th anniversary of the victory of their mentor winning Wimbledon for the first time in Yvonne Goolagong. It was just all so perfect.
Mm. And it's a funny one, isn't it? Not that any of us can anyway relate, but when it is something that you've dreamed about and wanted forever, it's almost impossible for it not to disappoint in some way. It's almost impossible for it to exceed expectations, certainly. And yet it really seemed for Ash Barty like it at least met expectations, if not exceeded them. And of course, there's the fact that it happened on the 50th anniversary of Yvonne Goolagong's first victory, which again feels written and destined and perfect. And of course, it's none of those things. It just is, but it feels so wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, you could see the emotion immediately just engulfing her. And I think something is added to it by the fact that she was made to work so hard for it. In the end, there's nothing she would have wanted more than to put in the virtuoso display that she started off putting in and maybe just accelerating to the finish line. But I think in terms of a memory, it's an additional triumph to win the way she did, because she was put under such pressure in the end.
Mm. And I do find that fascinating, always, how someone can go from winning a match point to tears so quickly. It just shows how close to the surface those emotions are and what a lid they're keeping on it, even though it may not feel like it. I suppose there were some signs in this match that Barty was tense and nervous. You know, she could have closed it out in two sets. She served for it and played a bad game. But just the strength of that emotion immediately after winning, I just find that so interesting.
And you can apply that to Pliskova too. Obviously, it ended up being negative emotion after the match, but it was all there. And it always is all there. She's just not a demonstrative person. I think it was that made it, you know, hey, Ash Barty isn't a demonstrative person or player either. So this applies to both of them. It was particularly powerful seeing that emotion sort of leak out of them today. And it was sort of an unstoppable torrent of emotion for both of them. And, you know, it absolutely was not inevitable. There was that I was sort of asking Matt to Google or look up or come up with stats for off the top of his head over the course of this match, there was...
Well, Catherine, you said, when do we mention Golden Set? And when do we mention Natasha Zvereva?
Because Barty won the first 14 points of the match.
And then, not even that long later, Matt said... Has anyone ever served for the Wimbledon title and not ended up ever winning a Wimbledon title? Now, none of these stats ended up being produced fully or ended up being relevant. But that's the roller coaster that we all went on over the course of that match. And that is down to Karolina Pliskova that we went on that roller coaster, because it looked like being anything but. It looked like being a sort of...
Rome.
Yeah. I was trying to think of a sort of fairground ride that you put a toddler in where you just sort of poodle along very slowly and it's all very disappointing.
Yeah, but also really quickly.
Yeah.
It could have gone so quickly.
Ash Barty won the first 14 points of the final today, and we all were thinking about the Rome final. And Karolina Pliskova must have been thinking about the Rome final.
She said she was.
Yeah, I love the fact that's one of the things that I think she's achieved so much in this last few days. And again today in her post-match press conference, she didn't even get asked that. She volunteered it. She said, when it was happening, I was thinking about the Rome final and losing 6-love, 6-love to Iga Świątek. And I thought, please don't happen again. And... honestly, it looked like it was happening again. 4-love down she was. She did get a point in that fourth game, but she was 4-love down. And it's a similar sort of style of opponent, somebody who's not just going to batter the ball back and forth with her. She's going to make her move. She's going to put her in horrible positions. And for a hitter like Pliskova essentially is, it's a nightmare when she's playing somebody that good who's on. And that's what was happening. And Pliskova couldn't get her feet moving. She couldn't get a rhythm. She couldn't feel relaxed. There was never a moment where she's given the sort of ball she wants to be hitting. And an enormous achievement from her to turn that around and not be too far away from winning the title.
Yeah, she kept saying in a press conference how proud she was of her efforts. I think all tournament, really. She'd said that second week was very much the goal here. She'd never been beyond round four at Wimbledon, but especially today, because I don't think at any point she really had what you would call her A game. I mean, there were moments she came up with some great shots, but it wasn't like
it was the never
Sabalenka.
Flowing like it was against Sabalenka.
No.
She was forcing it out of herself at points.
Absolutely. And that isn't what I think lots of us associate with Karolina Pliskova, an ability to turn a match around or change the narrative mid-match. And she did that today. And that was to her immense credit, because I don't think Barty completely fell away. I think her level probably did drop a little bit. I didn't think she played quite as well today as she did in the semi-final, but she was.
But Pliskova had to give her the opportunity for that to happen.
Totally, she had to improve from really the first probably 45 minutes of the match. She was a set and 3-1 down, and she hadn't found a game, and then she made big improvements.
And my recollection of that Rome final is that there wasn't much defiance. They got to a point in that match where she just said, I just want the ground to swallow me up. This is over. She didn't stop trying, but she certainly didn't sit down and say, no, this is not happening like this. And yeah, I mean, okay, that's not a Wimbledon final. You would expect more in a Wimbledon final, but that was a massive result for Pliskova reaching the final of that tournament after the time she'd been having. That was a massive final at the time, and she didn't muster any kind of resilience or defiance that day. And it was, yeah, those are the sort of, I mean, obviously that was an extreme example, but that is kind of what you associate with Karolina Pliskova, isn't it? She's not someone that wrestles things and turns things around. And yeah, she completely changed the narrative of that match today. And I know she was a breakdown for most of the third set, but didn't feel like she was that far away from winning it. I mean, there was a, when Barty went to serve out the match in the third set, obviously she'd tried to do so in the second set and been unsuccessful. There was, I think, a forehand drive volley that she missed into the net. And I think everybody thought, oh no, especially, you know, given that she'd already failed to close it out once. And yeah, it felt like it was only a point or two away from being really quite different.
Yeah, I think Barty had to creep over the line, really. And what I found interesting, I think was a clear tactic on behalf of Barty. She didn't seem to play hardly any double-handed backhands to me. She was just wedded to the slice because of who she was playing. And for the first half an hour, Pliskova had no clue how to get any timing on that shot off that stroke.
Yeah, and it's the slice which works particularly well with Pliskova, because the reason Pliskova has always said she doesn't particularly love the grass, even though people might think she should, is getting down low. She really struggles with that. She doesn't do a Angelique Kerber and bend her knees and get down to the ball. She tries to play it from quite an upright position, and I think she struggles to get the contact and the timing on it. And yeah, Barty used that shot brilliantly, and also her forehand. I mean, I was watching the build-up on the BBC prior to the match, and they had Billie Jean King on, and she was saying, I love the Barty cross-court forehand. She said, I just love it, you know, just with that enthusiasm that Billie Jean King has when she sees something in a player that she really likes. And I was looking out for it then in this match, and Barty hooks it cross-court and just gets Pliskova and all her other opponents on the run with that shot. It is such a weapon.
Creates an impossible angle on it, yet with so much margin, just feels like it can't miss. It's incredible.
You're left with few options, really, because especially somebody who hits it as flat as Pliskova does, she can end up having to try to go for the postage stamp down the line, you know.
Her approach to the slice backhands reminded me of a particularly savage description from Craig Revel Horwood in Strictly Come Dancing of Judy Murray's dancing attempts, where he likened her to an ironing board.
Blimey. We think you're way better than that, just stiff, rigid.
And upright. Stiff, upright and rigid. You know, she doesn't Pliskova really even try to get down low, does she? She just sort of tries to use her hand and her wrist to work the ball and get it up from low. She doesn't sort of even attempt to engage her knees in the action.
I can't get out of my head what Craig Revel Horwood might say about my dancing.
He described somebody else as looking like a poo.
Oh my God.
Because they were dressed in brown. So, you know, I think it could have been worse.
Right, okay.
Can't remember who that was. Okay. Maybe Fiona Phillips. Anyway.
Okay.
This is a judge on Strictly Come Dancing, yes. Which, what's it called in America or other countries?
Dancing with the Stars.
Dancing with the Stars, yes. There we go.
But what Pliskova started to do was just time her double hander or her own forehand off the the Barty slice. And she was very careful how she did it. And she wasn't trying to hit it too hard, but she was just trying to sort of neutralise it by keeping the rally going until she got maybe a ball she liked a bit more.
And I think she, as much as Barty did a sensational job of masking it for a long time, I think Pliskova sniffed out the nerves and the tension from Ash Barty and knew when the opening was, knew when to just don't make a mistake here, ask her the question.
Yeah.
And took her to a tie break in the second set, and Matt and I looked at one another and says, who you got winning this? We both said Barty. And Karolina Pliskova showed us something that I'm not sure anybody was expecting. And look, it sounds a horribly harsh thing to say, I still think she probably won't win a slam. But I think if she does retire without winning a slam today, and what she managed today might make her sleep more easy.
Well,
she
certainly can't have regrets from today, I don't think. We did get one of those Barty moments of her saying, you'll win one of these, to her in the post-match speech, which is exactly what you have to say. But I loved the way Pliskova spoke about herself, because she said, I mean, she'd done this brilliant interview pre-match where a couple of quotes bounced out at me. One was where she said, Barty makes you feel ugly on the court. And then she said she refused to be compared to Petra Kvitova and Jana Novotná, former Czech winners, because she didn't want to put any more pressure on herself. She said she'd played that game before and she was determined that she was just going to do her best and see where that took her. And in her post-match press conference, the view was very much, I think I can do this, but the key to me doing it is to be surrounded by these people who believe in me and make me feel good and make me go about the job right, you know. And I mean, which we'll come on to the way Barty approaches things like that a little later, because I've been listening to an interview with her mindset coach, and although Pliskova wasn't putting it down to something specific or a specific person like that, you could tell how she'd learned herself how to deal with these things.
And this week must give her belief. I mean, she was pretty much at one of her lowest ebbs, certainly in the last few years, coming into this tournament. I mean, we do pre-tournament predictions with some of our Kickstarter backers. I looked today, 60 people in this competition, nobody had Pliskova even in the quarterfinals.
Not even Pam Shriver.
Not even Pam Shriver.
She had Cam Norrie in the quarterfinals and not Karolina Pliskova.
Yeah. I think now we're at this weekend, you can think, oh, Karolina Pliskova, former world number one, won titles on grass, been in a Grand Slam final. It feels reasonably right that she's in the Grand
Slam final. But that's when you shouldn't pick her. When you feel like you should pick her, that's when you shouldn't pick her.
Yeah, but I just think for her, she must take so much from this. She must know that she can be at this low ebb and still come back from it. And actually, that was, you know, this was in many ways a match of great contrast, you know, stylistically. What you said there, David, about Karolina Pliskova not wanting to be compared to other players. Barty is someone who has embraced the whole Yvonne Goolagon connection and talked that up. But one similarity was that they both came into this event with some doubt over them. Pliskova's, we've outlined, and some extraordinary quotes from Barty in her post-match press conference, saying that her team really didn't divulge to her at the time quite how potentially serious the injury she picked up at the French Open was, you know. And she said that she's just spoken to her team and they said, look, we were told that was 2 months, that injury, to come back from. And it's kind of a miracle that you're here, and she did amazing, you know, work and rehab with her team. And
She go to Taylor Fritz's medical team?
Yeah, we need to have a word with these people.
Yeah, what is going on? But yeah, I just think, you know, 15 days ago, that was the reason I didn't pick Ash Barty for the title.
Oh, here we go.
I just wasn't sure how fit she was.
Oh, the reason I didn't is because I'm crap at predictions and we're never doing them again. But...
just remembered I have.
No, you haven't, David.
Didn't I? Petra Kvitova.
You had Petra Kvitova who lost on day one.
Who did I have? When did I have party losing then?
I had her losing in the semis, but...
Oh, I forgot that.
I'm so glad I took us down this avenue. Aren't we all pleased?
Yes, that's right, isn't it? I got it wrong on the first day of the tournament. Yes, great.
Anyway.
And it was the French Open I had her winning. It's kind of similar. Except she didn't win that one.
Right. No, she didn't. Should we talk about her speech?
And come just before you do that, can you talk about the moment that she won it?
Well, that she doesn't remember.
No, she didn't remember the match point.
Talk me through match point. Well, I don't remember it.
But then she fell to her knees, didn't she? And just like you say, Matt, we've seen it a lot with Nadal when he falls flat on his back. We've seen it with Federer just suddenly sobbing. You know, it is just that release, that moment of all that pent up, that clench unclenches. And I can't imagine what it must be like. The closest that probably in my life that I've had it is when my son was born and my daughter was born or something like that. When, you know, you're just so scared of it going wrong or something, and then it's all right. But crikey, I can't imagine. And yeah, the speeches were both brilliant, actually.
Yeah, they were. They both were so desperate to hold it together, weren't they? And they both basically did, but for one moment each. Karolina Pliskova had to step away from the mic to compose herself. It was a very raw moment, and Ash Barty was completely composed until she was asked about Yvonne Goolagong and the 50th anniversary, and she just managed to say, through tears and a lump in her throat, "I hope Yvonne would be proud." Oh. I mean, I don't want to put words in Yvonne Goolagong's mouth, but I think she's proud, Ash.
I think so.
I think that's mission accomplished. And yeah, just the fact that she embraced that pressure, her ultimate hero, she embraced the pressure of trying to emulate her.
She voiced all of it. Yeah. She had before the tournament starts, she designs an outfit to pay tribute to her hero on the 50th anniversary of her title win.
It's obviously a completely different sort of genre of embracing pressure, but it made me think of Naomi Osaka and the seven masks. Her saying, "I've got seven masks. I'm here to wear all seven of them, and for you to see all seven of them." It's a similar kind of embracing additional pressure and trying to do something more than just win a title. And, you know, Yvonne Goolagong and making strides for Indigenous Australians is something incredibly important to Ash Barty, just as Black Lives Matter and death at the hands of law enforcement is something that means a lot to Naomi Osaka. And yeah, the place that those two acts come from, I think, is a similar place that only pretty great special people can probably relate to.
I would say Ash Barty as well is her announcing ahead of time that it is her dream to win Wimbledon, and to not be afraid to put that out there, it's for everybody to know, that is a clear departure from where I think where she used to be. I even think back less than 2 years ago, I remember you telling me a number of times that you find Ash Barty a really hard interview. And she's not a hard interview. I mean, you haven't interviewed her for quite a while because we haven't been at tournaments, but
saying that after the pre-final interview I did with her at the French Open.
Yeah.
And like, I never stopped liking her or being a big fan of hers, but didn't get anything out of her. It was all completely pleasant. totally pleasant, polite, professional. I came out of it full of respect for her, but I didn't draw her on anything. It was, there was a hard wall up.
Imagine it's like trying to play her. You know, you're not going to get any mistakes. You're not going to get any unforced errors because she's careful and she's very proficient at what she's doing. Well, that has changed. Wholly, that has changed. And I listened after the final on the way home. I listened to half an hour of a 50-minute podcast, which had been put onto me by a few of our listeners got in touch and said, you know, you should listen to this interview with Ben Crowe, her mindset coach. And he'd worked for about 30 years with various sports athletes and various teams in Australia. And she apparently started working with him following the 2018 Wimbledon loss to Daria Kasatkina, that one that I often refer to because I covered it for Five Live, and she'd kind of got beaten at her own game. And that was third round.
Was that the day that you decided, I'm picking Kasatkina every match, every week, from now on in?
Yes. Barty struggled to stomach that loss, and the same actually happened the next year when she lost to Alison Risk, but that was very much a work in progress. Of course, she'd won the French Open, but she'd been with this guy, and she's been with him for, 3 years? And this podcast, it's really, really worth a listen. It's called In Conversation With, and it's from ABC Radio in Australia. And, so one of the listeners that we have, Mark Sparky Jones, who's apparently a fitness trainer, he put us onto it. And the kind of things that Ben Crowe is talking about is that he wants her to go back to her earliest, happiest memories, not worry about the outcome of anything she's doing, just strip things right back to the absolute basics of the moment and why she started playing in the first place. And he says sort of reclaim her childhood self in the joy of everything, that in just the doing rather than the outcome. And she has managed to instill that, I think, in the way she talks in interviews now. She talks with such enjoyment about, I mean, other players would call it the process, but she breaks it down into actually loving the sport. And he actually drew the parallel with Roger Federer. He said Federer has said himself he focuses on humility, gratitude and humour in order to get through what for some players is quite hard, tour life. And yet Federer never seems to find it hard in that way. And that's the vibe that I've had from Barty the last few months. Every time I've heard us talk, that she's enjoying this long road trip with Craig Tizer and the people she has around her. I mean, it doesn't come across as a chore, and I'm sure there are all sorts of external pressures, but she is just refusing to get distracted. And I just found it really interesting the way he has helped her learn a few techniques to just break that down and reduce it to the sheer enjoyment of doing what she likes doing.
Does Ben Crowe only work with sports people, or is he available?
Well,
for podcasters,
I highly recommend listening to this interview because I definitely listened to it and thought, God, that makes so much sense. and it just
and I seem to remember some quotes from Barty. Would have been, you know, a long time ago now, when she took her break, saying that, you know, it was burnout, really, was the reason for her break, and she wasn't enjoying it. And she used to talk about tennis as a game and something she did but didn't define her. And if it sounds like what you're saying, David, is she's got that feeling back.
Yeah, well, and what did she say about Pliskova? And she said, I like to test myself against these people.
Mm.
It's the enjoyment of the sport, and that it's really not that big a deal if she doesn't win. She has to be okay with that in her mind, I think, and then she can actually do it because her game is so well-honed, so finely tuned, so full of options that as long as she just enjoys playing that game, the rest of it will sort of take care of itself. And if it doesn't, it's all right. She still likes herself. She still loves her family and her friends and her team. And they all love her. And it's such a positive, healthy way of going about it.
Yeah. It's Hannah said something when Ash Barty won that really stuck with me. She said, "I wanted this so much for her." This is Hannah that does our Twitter exceptionally well. She said, "I wanted this so much for her. If you don't win Wimbledon, they don't know you in this country. I wanted this country to know Ash." And it's so true, isn't it? I mean...
Well, I told you my daughter absolutely adores her. My daughter's 11 years old, and she just... She thinks she's the best.
I mean, she
loves Świątek as well. There's a few that she really, really likes. And Ash Barty, yeah. And I think that there must be so many people generally, but so many young girls, young women who were inspired by her.
That's so great to hear. What a role model.
And to have her, like you say, though, like Hannah was saying, to have that on national TV here in the UK during Wimbledon, that is when you make an impression.
Mm. And I think we think of the Grand Slams on an equal footing because we're in tennis, but I do think Wimbledon has a greater cut through in sport than Roland Garros probably does, still.
Look at Pat Cash.
Absolutely.
One Wimbledon title.
Yeah, and I think just, in tennis terms, that French Open that Ash Barty won, it was such a chaotic French Open with the scheduling and the weather, and the final against Vondrosheva was... It was a little bit of a non-event because Vondrosheva had never played on Philippe Chatrier before because of the aforementioned scheduling. And I feel like she really got the stage and the scene this whole tournament. She played the reigning French Open champion in round four. She played Angelique Kerber, a former Wimbledon champion, in the semifinals. She had a tough final. This was a tough road to a Grand Slam. And, there were some Ash Barty doubters at the start of the year. Talk of an undeserving number one because she hadn't been on the tour, and she was benefiting from the rankings. But my goodness, Ash Barty has proved all of those doubters wrong this year. I mean, she had done prior to this Wimbledon. She'd had a fantastic season with three titles, but becoming a multiple Grand Slam champion, winning Wimbledon, which she had always set her sights on, this elevates Ash Barty, this victory, I think, both within tennis and as Hannah's said there, to just a greater public consciousness. I think we'll be more aware of Ash Barty, the tennis player and the person as well, as a result of this.
I am absolutely guilty of what you just said, by the way. I referred to Naomi Osaka during Miami as the de facto number one. I referred to Ash Barty as world number one only due to the COVID quirk in the rankings.
I don't think that's outrageous, really. Naomi Osaka had won two successive Grand Slam titles, or two that she'd played.
Yeah, but I think she might have been number one had the rankings been normal. Flippantly.
Categorically,
right.
I think, is this sort of, well, of course, Naomi Osaka is the de facto number one, and, I don't know. I wouldn't... Hindsight is a wonderful thing. Let's conclude that.
Given that this comes, two-thirds through this incredibly long road trip for Barty, I think it makes it all the more impressive.
Mm-hmm.
It's something else that she's doing.
And look, the last time she won a Grand Slam... The rest of the season was absolutely fine. It was decent, but relative to expectation as a result of winning the French Open, it was a little disappointing. The Alison Risk loss at Wimbledon and the Chong Wong loss at the US Open. But this feels different because of this road trip she's on. And look, I'm not saying she's necessarily going to go and win the Olympics and the US Open, but I might be saying she's going to win the Olympics and US Open.
Well, she's
or one of them.
I think her mindset and her I mean, okay, you can't legislate for injury, but she doesn't look tired. She looks fresh, and she looks like she's still enjoying it. And if they can keep that up.
And that's a bit of a superpower in tennis at the moment.
She's a threat anywhere because she can play on anything. Mm. And, I mean, she can be beaten. But the beauty of the women's game is there are so many exciting players who can derail you. But I don't think there's anybody any better than she is. I think that there are people with different powers. Mm. I love the way she enjoys the challenges of all of them.
Yeah, I think among her many strengths, her adaptability is one of her greatest. And to me, and I think the stats and the title she's won bear this out. She is the player coming through, and you know she's very much here now. But I still sort of think of her as one of these young WTA Avengers, as we've called them. She's the one who is most comfortable on all the surfaces. I mean, I think the highs Naomi Osaka has hit on the hard courts are a level that Ash Barty hasn't quite reached on the hard courts yet, but I think she probably could. And then you've got Halep and Muguruza now, who have done the same as Barty and won Wimbledon and the French Open and are still looking for slam titles on hard courts. You've got Świątek, who seems a complete natural on the clay. You've got Andreescu, who can play well on the hard courts. There's such a fantastic variety of players now, but Barty is the one who stands out as someone who can flourish on all of the surfaces, indoors, outdoors, clay, grass, whatever.
And it feels like she's already there. It doesn't feel like
totally.
There's a work in progress towards it.
She's there.
Can the US Open start next week, please? Because I've got a...
That would be the Olympics.
A really sad... I've booked myself in to suffer a terrible depression next week. And it'd be great if the US Open could just start then and be brilliant.
You and Billie Jean both. Not King, canine.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Wow, Ash Barty, Wimbledon champion. We've had a few other Wimbledon champions crowned today. In the women's doubles, we have had Su Weishei and Eliza Mertens, the third seeds, beat Veronika Kudermetova and Elena Vesnina 9-7 in the third set to win the Wimbledon doubles title for the first time as a team. Shea's won it before with Barbora Strizova, I think.
Yes, and with Peng Shuai as well.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, but a first one for Elisa Mertens.
Yeah.
And Kudermetova and Vesnina had two match points in the second set and also served for it in the third set. I mean, the crowd were gripped by it, weren't they?
So was Matt Roberts.
It was a stunning match. It was one of those where I didn't get into it until kind of midway through the second set because I was going to the Barty and Pliskova press conferences. But then suddenly it just got amazing. And honestly, the match point save, I've been desperately trying to find a replay of it somewhere. The match point save that Shea and Mertens came up with in the second set to save the second of the match points was one of the best match point saves I can remember. Certainly championship points. I mean, it's a really long rally. They were switching sides. They sort of all ended up on the same side of the court at one stage. And there was a dead net court that Shea got to. It was just amazing. And yeah, this match just had everything you could wish for. And you know, they're a very new team, Shea and Mertens. They've only teamed up in the last couple of months. They actually lost seven match points themselves at the French Open when they lost to Świątek and Matek Sands. And now they've won their first Grand Slam title together. Mertens is second of the year because she also won the Australian Open with Sabalenka. She's back to doubles world number one on Monday, and she was outstanding. I really, really noticed what a great, smart doubles player she is. The way she constantly lobs the player at the net. I mean, it must just be infuriating to be that player against Elise Mertens. She's got great court sense, and combine that with Shea and her touch, and they're a really, really strong pairing. Yeah, it was a great, great match.
There was a lovely photo posted at the start of today of Dylan Alcott and Ash Barty, because, of course, Dylan Alcott was going for glory today for Australia as well. And he won the quad wheelchair singles title for the second time. He beat Sam Schroeder 6-2, 6-2 in the final. And Dylan Alcott is on for the Golden Slam.
I've heard that somewhere before.
Imagine if two players did the Golden Slam this year.
That would be quite cool.
Yeah, that would be quite something. So I'm going to follow Dylan Alcott's progress very closely indeed. We also had the ladies' wheelchair and the men's wheelchair, the women's wheelchair and the men's wheelchair doubles final today. In the women's, Jordan Wiley and Yui Kamiji won their fifth title together. And, of course, there was a wonderful scene on the court afterwards where Jordan Wiley was joined by her son, Jackson, with whom she had been, I think, 11 weeks pregnant when they won the title together back in 2017. So a lovely, lovely moment for them. And just a few hours before that, Gordon Reid and Alfie Hewitt won the men's wheelchair doubles title for the fourth time together.
Did I read that was their seventh in a row of Grand Slam doubles titles?
Yeah, I heard that today. Yeah, amazing.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, some of the streaks and the records and so on in wheelchair tennis are just extraordinary. And we watched bits and bobs of that, or we caught bits and bobs of that, and good crowds for those matches. Really, really good crowds. And David, you were on court one for a bit today and saw an incredible crowd for a junior semi-final.
Oh, it was amazing. It was the boys' semi-finals, and the crowd were treating them like they were household names who were just tearing it up. And, I mean, this was a capacity crowd on court one. So you're talking 12,000 people whilst the women's singles final is going on, and they could have been outside watching that on Henman Hill, but they weren't. They were loving every minute of this. And these two lads, they were fighting it out. And I mean, I'd never heard of either of them before. And then at the end, there was some aggro. Oh, it was brilliant fun.
Tell us about the aggro.
Yeah, well, the chap who lost gave a no-look handshake. He'd already looked away while he was on his way to the chair, but kept his hand there.
That's really good aggro.
Yeah.
A no-look handshake. That's solid aggro.
And then when the winner came, then left the chair, having put his racket away, he came out and did a sort of double fist pump, sort of lawnmower type fist pump arrangement. And then while he was walking back to his chair, the other guy was coming past the other way and refused to sort of let him go. And the winner had to do almost like a little dance move to get out the way as they just sort of bumped shoulders.
We like this.
So there's plenty of high quality aggro there. And actually the chap who won the match was Samir Banerjee from the United States. He's from New Jersey, 17 years of age. I loved his intent to come forward. He wasn't serving a volley, but every time he got a forehand anyway, even if it was just inside the baseline on his own side, he was coming in after it, and a really exciting player.
He will play Viktor Lilov, also of America, in the boys' final tomorrow. We saw a bit of Viktor Lilov in semi-final action against Jack Pinnington-Jones of Great Britain yesterday. He had to play two matches in one day, I think, because they were so backed up because of the rain on the outside, uncovered court. So an All-American boys' final tomorrow. The girls' singles final will be the German, born in August 2003, so that would make her 17, nearly 18.
Yes.
She is called Natasha Mariana Schunk. She's a lefty. She will be taking on Anna Mintegi del Olmo, who is also 17.
And a glasses wearer.
I was just going to say, Matt.
Yes.
Really excellent glasses wearer. Yeah.
You too.
Great stuff.
Eyes lighting up.
Look.
Oh, and that is a good pair.
Yeah.
She's borrowed Matt's. Look at that.
Yeah.
Very similar.
No, Matt's around. Anyway, excellent glasses wearer. Check her out in the girls' singles final tomorrow. There's also the ladies' wheelchair singles final, which is American Gothatso Motanya. Montagna of South Africa. Gothatso Montagna is what I think it is. I hope so anyway. Please let me know if I've got that horribly, horribly wrong. She is taking on, now then, I'm going to make up for things here because I feel like the only non-Dutch tennis person in the world that can say Dide de Groot.
Nailed it.
I shouted at the TV several times today when people said Dide de Groot. You Philistines, Dide de God.
Right, okay.
So she'll be in the ladies, the women's wheelchair singles final tomorrow. The men's wheelchair singles final is Joachim Gerard of Belgium up against Gordon Reid of Great Britain. And there's another match tomorrow. In fact, there's two other matches. There's a mixed doubles final, Neil Skupski and Desiree Kravchik against Joe Salisbury, Harriet Dart, a three-quarters British mixed doubles final.
Which is the first time that's happened in over 70 years, apparently.
Wow. Yeah, so expect a great crowd to stick on for that after the men's singles final between Novak Djokovic and Matteo Berrettini. We've all done our predictions. Tell the people what we've gone for.
For strategic reasons, I've gone for Novak Djokovic in five.
What do you actually think will happen?
Four.
I've gone for Novak Djokovic in four because I just need some points.
I've gone for Novak Djokovic in four because I think that's what will actually happen. And I try to
David
play
described
this.
That as taking the high road,
yes.
Earlier.
Correct. Mm.
Yeah.
So
okay.
That's how I play.
Well, that's from 2 o'clock tomorrow on Centre Court, the last day of Wimbledon 2021.
And it's a potentially monumental day. You know, if
I mean, England
equals
are going to win the Euros, so it is a monumental day. It's just a potentially extra monumental
just
day.
Just imagine, though, after all these years of us talking about how funny it would be if Djokovic, Nadal and Federer all ended up with 20, and tomorrow they are most likely this time tomorrow going to have 20 Grand Slam singles titles each. That is amazing.
It's almost sort of too big for us. It's like at the French Open when we realised we weren't talking about the fact that Nadal could potentially reach 21, you know, the clubhouse and be the clubhouse leader. It's almost sort of too monumental and ridiculous and
now Nadal
poetic
may,
to
Nadal
to really...
may never feel what it's like to be the clubhouse leader.
These are discussions to have tomorrow, David.
Okay.
Who knows what time that podcast will be recorded? Deep in the midst of football celebrations. I really hope these aren't comments that age terribly badly.
Well, quick final in the singles, and we record pre-football. Medium-length final. Who knows? Long final, post-football.
You're going to have to wait. Yeah. Yeah, it's very much a TBC tomorrow, but you will get one last tennis podcast from Wimbledon 2021. And no matter what state of jubilation we're in, we promise to make it a good one. Zeus, I promise to at least try and get some points for us tomorrow. David has taken the high road with Rogue, make of that what you will. Matt has gone strategic for Scousel Mousel. Billie Jean, I think she's alive, but she hasn't made a noise in a long time. She's pooped from all the cuddles. She's sponsored by Billie Jean King. Chris Albert Lee is our executive producer. Mocker is our Wimbledon mascot. Hello to Mocker and his lovely owner, Dawn. Matt, who are our penultimate Wimbledon shout-outs for?
We have Kieran Rice.
Like Declan Rice.
Like Declan Rice.
Oh, yeah. That's so perfect. Please let the next two names also be the same as England players.
Oh, and by the way, it's match point in the men's doubles. Look at that.
Yes. The reason I haven't mentioned the men's doubles final is because it's 10:17 p.m. and it's still on.
Extraordinary.
Which might not be the case in about 4 seconds' time. A lob has been lofted up. Let's not do live commentary on a match.
Well, we've got David Law.
Off you go, David.
I think it might be illegal for me to do it on the podcast. We haven't got the rights.
It's over.
It's over. It's over. Nikola Mektic, Mate Pavic, the world number ones and top seeds have done it. David's off the hook. They're Wimbledon champions. Everyone's a winner. Matt, who are our last two shout-outs for?
And I should just say, that's been coming, hasn't it? A Grand Slam title for these two. They've won pretty
Absolutely.
Much everything they've played this year. It's a big deal for them to get there first.
Lovely cuddles with Zubias and Granoyers.
Yeah.
And of course, Mektic Pavic had COVID, didn't they, at the French?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So well done
Yeah,
to
it's
them.
Massive. Massive for them. And of course, they'll be going to the Olympics and aiming for favourites for the men's doubles gold. Matt,
back to shout-outs.
Back to shout-outs. People are on the edge of their seats.
We have Joseph Barreto, whose name you will
I'm
remember.
I'm worried that that's an Italian name. And
No.
Okay.
No. He was guest editor for our Jim Courier-focused Roland Garros relived show.
He really did us proud.
Splendid job. Yes, well done, Joseph, and thanks for your support.
Sorry for speculating you might be Italian, and sorry to all Italian listeners. Generally, big fan of Italians. Tomorrow, not a big fan of Italians.
Sorry, Matteo.
Yeah. yeah.
And the third shout-out is for Lars Graf.
Oh, hello.
Who was in touch today? The famous umpire from yesteryear. And and who now...
He retired a few years ago.
Yeah, and now... And now he's the tournament director of the China Open in Beijing. But he was in touch with us today, wasn't he, Matt, to remind us of him being on one of the lines during the famous McEnroe rant. When I think it was that the one where he said the question, Jerk?
Yes.
The one? Answer the question!
Yes, the one that prompts one of David's best impersonations.
The question, Jerk! Yeah. Sorry, Catherine, I've woken up your neighbours.
And yet not Billie Jean. somehow. No, I do feel like I need to wrap up this podcast and check that she's conscious. So join us for one more Wimbledon Daily Tennis Podcast tomorrow. Subscribe to the newsletter, all of that jazz. One last day of, Instagram will continue, but, you know, the golden content might not be quite so free-flowing as it has been this fortnight.
You're going to give up after this fortnight?
No.
Oh, good.
No, I love it too much. Lovely. Right then, we'll speak to you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.